Today's episode, whilst a beautiful conversation, goes deep in places, and I just wanted to give you a bit of a heads up that it might make you tear up a little. I'll admit that our producer Brianna and I shed a few tears ourselves whilst editing this episode, but there is so much great advice in here around supporting others through grief that I can't help but feel that everyone needs to hear the wisdom Edwina shares with us. She is so gracious and generous in sharing what was a horrendous experience, and I truly hope you get something from this conversation to help you or perhaps help those close to you. Hello and welcome to the Wabi Sabi series podcast, Unlikely Conversations on Uncomfortable Topics. I'm your host, Michelle Cox, a corporate exec turned author who has recently written a series of books about topics we don't often talk about. Things like death, grief, not having kids, and the unexplained power doctors often wield over us. Apparently, some of my books have made some people feel a little uncomfortable, but I felt that I wanted to have far more conversations around weird, wonderful, and sometimes taboo topics. So I reached out to some interesting people and asked them just one question. If there is one topic that you'd love society to talk more about, what would it be and why? And what they've shared with me has been amazing. So let's dive in and see where the conversation takes us.
Grief happens in every single person's life, and the more we ignore it, the more we're not comfortable with it.
Edwina Simon and her husband Ant faced the worst year of their lives in 2018 when their firstborn son Sebi died when he was just 10 months old. Ed, like me, has faced a huge amount of loss in her life. She lost her mum as a young girl, her dad in her early 20s, and her beloved grandma Marty to a long battle with dementia in 2013. Rather than wallow like many could have, Ed and Ant have chosen a positive path to speak about the loss of Sebi and the grief that encompasses them daily as bereaved parents. She shares stories and resources on her website, The Griefy Way, to help other parents navigate the early stages of the loss of a child. Eddie and I have had many discussions over death and grief over the years. It's wonderful to have you here on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's lovely to chat to you.
So, Eddie, I'm sure I know what the answer of this is going to be, but if there was one topic you wish people would talk more about, what would it be?
I would love to know why we as a whole suck at condolence so badly.
Big topic. Well, you and I have talked a lot about this sort of stuff. So why is it that you feel that people suck at condolence?
We have. I think we've got a history of talking over wines and crying over wines about the many, many people that we've lost each along the way. And I just believe it's something that you grow with the more grief that you take on in your life. I think condolence is one of those things that does definitely come more naturally to people who have dealt with a lot of death and dying in their lives.
Yeah, and I think, that's very natural, isn't it? About anything you learn in life, you don't realize how bad it is if you haven't gone through it. But I think one of the things that you and I have both been advocating for a while is around educating others a little bit, or at least helping people to help others that are grieving and to understand the process a little more. So tell me how, obviously you've gone through some pretty gruesome stuff, and, how you kind of navigate that and have the strength, I guess, to support others when you've gone through so much shit in your life, Eddie.
Yeah, I have. I've lost quite a few people in my life. I lost my mum when I was young. So I grew up with a single dad and my maternal grandmother, who I adored. And then, unfortunately, lost my dad at 21. And then my grandmother battled through dementia when I was in my late 20s. So I have lost all the three most significant adults in my life.
And can I ask, sorry, Eddie, how did your parents die?
So my mum passed away from melanoma when I was 4 years old. So there wasn't a lot that I know about the history of that, because, of course, then when I lost my dad, I was probably only getting into those formative years where you start to ask your parents those questions and things, and then all the information was gone. So even in the last few years having children, midwives always ask me, oh, how was your mother's birth, or how was your grandmother's birth? And you don't realize when you lose parents, but I would say probably under 30, all of the questions that you want to know, because you don't make those maturity steps until you're in your late 20s, early 30s and think, oh, I'd really like to know that, but it's gone. So I think the life of grief changes over time, particularly for people who are older than you, because I think what you want to know changes over time.
Yeah, it makes sense. And so then obviously the most gruesome, you know, grief that you've gone through is the loss of your beautiful little son, Sebi, who I was lucky enough to have cuddles with before he left us in this life. And so talk to me about that, because there's just so much that you and Anne have gone through.
Yes, there's a lot to unpack when you lose a child. So our first son, Sebi, was completely healthy, completely normal until he was 6 months old, and then he had quite a severe seizure. So most people, 95% of all seizures last no longer than 5 minutes, but on this particular day he had a seizure that lasted for a couple of hours, and it was quite strange, but he had meningitis at the time and the doctors didn't really think anything of it. Over the next 4 months, he had 3 more seizures and they classified him as an epileptic. And during that time, because the seizures were so bad, we were extremely blessed to be included in this amazing genetic program at Sydney Children's Hospital at Randwick. And we found out exactly what was wrong with him. And it's extremely rare. There's about 60 kids in the world that live with what he had, but he died. And that was even more shocking to any doctor that heard it, because they were like, we don't know why he died, because these other 60 kids live severely disabled lives, but they live. So we now know he's one of 3 children in the world in the past 6 years who've died from this genetic error. And it was just a freak of nature, really. So yeah, on the 31st of July, 2 years ago, he left us. And we have, you know, lived with that ever since. And I think one of the things that I speak most about, condolence, and as you said, you want to share stories. I think the most important thing about anyone that dies is the fact that they lived. So Sebi only lived for 10 months, but we don't want people to remember Sebi because he was the baby that died. So I'm very conscious of the way we speak about him, and that every time we speak about him, we're happy and we want to share the happiness and we want to remember, as you just said, you want to remember him as that gorgeous baby that you held in your arms. You don't want to remember him as the boy on the funeral booklet, because that's not how we want him to be remembered.
So true, and such a subtlety, but unless you've gone through, you know, such horrendous loss in your own life, it's kind of hard to understand, actually, because, and it was something I wrote, the quote around that was that just because they're not here doesn't mean they haven't lived. And that's what a lot of people have, a lot of discomfort, I guess, around talking about those that have passed, because they don't want to upset us. They don't want to upset you by bringing up Sebi's name, or, you know, your partner, your husband, your wife, your grandparents, whatever. And I understand that. But to me, it's, you know, it does almost like pretend that they didn't exist.
Absolutely.
Which is even more hurtful, isn't
it? Yes. Yeah. And we've talked about this too. And I do think you touch on this in your book, that your girlfriends in particular who knew your mum, they're the ones that hurt the most when they don't want to talk about her, because you're like, you grew up in my kitchen, mate. Like, she cooked for you. She picked you up from parties. She's this woman who was amazing. And I think that's something that so often is the natural reaction to grief and condolence. People feel so uncomfortable feeling sad or feeling upset that they refer it back and say exactly what you just said. I didn't want to make you upset. And that's not a true representation of the way they're feeling. I believe what people, if they dig deeper in that, what they're actually saying is, this makes me sad. I don't want to get upset, but I'm going to throw it back to you and say that I don't want to make you upset. But when people say that to me, I say, Well, that's okay that I'm upset because my baby died. Don't worry about me. I'm allowed to be as upset as I want to be. And please bring your pain and bring your discomfort to me, because if you're sad about the fact that my baby died, that's beautiful, because it means exactly what I want it to mean, and it means that he meant something to you.
Yeah, but Eddie, that's pretty, you know, like even you just saying that, it's like most people wouldn't be able to deal with that, you know? And I think that's, people even say that my book is very confronting for a lot of people. They can't even talk about death. And that's why the title is Death Doesn't Have to Be Morbid, because, you know, I think you and I are fun, loving, gorgeous girls that we talk about lots of different things. Just the fact that we happen to talk about death and dying and grief a bit doesn't make us, you know, sad asses.
We actually have a fun chat every now and then. But it, yeah, I think that it's a small shift, exactly as you said. It's, we're not trying to change the world with our language, but if we can open our eyes to the people around us, that I use grandmothers as an example, because so many people lose their grandmothers, right? You know, it just happens all the time. And I guess as we get older, it's their mother or their father. And wouldn't it be wonderful if your reaction to that, to your best friend or your neighbor or a work colleague, was to just hug them and say, "That is so shit. I'm with you." That's it.
If you have a topic burning inside you that you'd love to talk more about and have a conversation with me, I'd love to hear from you. So drop me a line at hello@wabisabiseries.com. Let's head back to the chat. You know, so how do we help people through this, right? People just don't know what to say. And then they say that to you, "But I don't know what to say." I'm like, that's okay. No one ever knows what to say. No one ever, you're never going to be able to bring them back. You're never going to say the right thing. But it's just actually all we want to know is that you care and that you're there for me if I need you. And as you said, that you, you know, Sebi meant something to you, and that you actually give a shit that he died, like not to suppress it and hide it and pretend that it didn't happen or that he didn't exist.
Yes. And I think that there's a few rules. I try not to go too deeply into the rules, but I think ignoring it is the worst thing in the world. And I still have friends to this day, or people in my life that to this day, who have never actually brought it up, who were always there in the wings and, you know, just can't find the strength to say something. And that's okay. But the more I speak about it, I know that they're watching and I know that they're listening. So my only hope is that when people hear conversations like these, that it does remind them of certain things, and it reminds them the next time that something happens, going, "Wow, I actually do feel bad that I didn't do that thing at that one time. This is my opportunity and this is my choice." And as I said at the start, the more you do something, the more comfortable you become doing it. I don't think there's ever an opportunity to not offer condolence when something bad happens in someone's life, when grief occurs, and be it a pet or, you know, or a grandmother, or, you know, just a story that's happened in their life, because grief happens in every single person's life, and the more we ignore it, the more we're not comfortable with it. So I think that's why you and I do choose that path, because we're able to communicate through language, and it's just those small changes that change the people around us.
Yeah. And like you said, then grief comes in so many forms. And I think at the moment, you know, like if you say someone loses a pet, that's like their fur baby. And to them, that's, you know, the most important thing in their life. And then to others, it could be, you know, they've lost their partner, as in their marriage is, you know, dissolved, or they've lost their job. Like, the, you know, that's pretty horrendous for some people as well. So having, you know, the art of condolence and being able to reach out to people when they're feeling pretty crap is a beautiful thing that you can help others with. So what are your words of wisdom there then, Eddie, about how to do it the right way, since we you feel that we do it pretty shit?
There's a beautiful wonderful article that Susan Silk has written, and she's a psychologist and she refers to her theory as the ring theory. And beautifully behind you, you've got this wonderful painting that almost I can talk to. So if you imagine the grieving person as the very center of that gorgeous flower, and then the closeness of the people around them move out towards the ring. So I always explain this within my family, that my husband and I lost our baby, so we are the center of that ring. And then we move outwards and we have my family, my brothers, who just adored their nephew unbelievably. And then you don't group people together, so my brothers are closer to me than my sister-in-laws are, so they're one level out again. And then you move on to the friends and family and move out. And basically the idea is you can never dump inwards. You can dump outwards, but you can't bring anything in. And our minds love to do this, and people listening to this will hear themselves do it next time they go through this. And one of the things that I got a lot when Sebi died was, oh, that's awful. A girl at work just had a miscarriage. And I was like, okay, thanks for telling me that, but it's not helpful to me right now. And I also feel really sad for your friend. So you've actually just given me a layer of sadness that I didn't need. And we do it so often. We love to group things together.
And it's almost, again, it's that what we were talking about before about the discomfort, right?
Yes.
It's because they're uncomfortable and they're like, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. Oh, so I'll just kind of, you know, pass the baton on something that's similar and that might just diffuse the situation a bit, rather than sitting in that discomfort and going, holy shit, you just lost your child. I don't know what to say. That's the most horrendous thing. Are you okay? What can I do? Can I help you? Is there anything you need?
That's it. I think, again, yeah, that's the discomfort. People don't like the bumbling and they think that at some point someone's saying the right thing. So, oh, hey, I'll tell this story and exactly, I'll deflect. And then it's just the worst thing you can do, because it doesn't even make it about you. So it's not even selfish, but you've just brought this third party story in. And generally a person who's grieving isn't all that upbeat and wanting to have a chat. So now you're talking about some person that they don't know who's having a miscarriage. And you're like, I don't care. Like, I'm sorry for her. And now I'm sad, but I don't care. So the silk ring theory is very basic. And it literally, if you think of grieving as the layers of a tree, and if you are feeling sad, so I will talk about my brother. My brother was obviously extremely upset and sad that he lost his beautiful nephew, but he would talk out. So he would talk to his wife about that. He would never dump on me and say, I can't believe I've lost my nephew. You're only allowed to push out with your grief. And it's such a simple analogy.
It's a tool, isn't it? But I think it actually could apply to lots of things. Like, just listening to you talk about that, it's actually like such a good thing when you're talking to others, where again you try and reconcile. And again, not so much like, you know, as heavy as grief like this, but other circumstances when people do try and, as you say, deflect. And oh, it's a wonderful tool. So how many layers can you have?
Many. And always go, always push them out, as many as you like. And but that's the thing, you never want to know. And I think that's so true what you said. That's very true, actually. In life, it's the gossip that gets to us the most, but your best friends and your closest people wouldn't gossip about you. But if you heard that someone five layers out was gossiping about you, it really annoys you. So it's just that real conscious effort that the person below you is hurting and you should be supportive. So when you don't even talk about the central ring there, so say you're a friend of mine and you heard about Sebi's loss, your friends then can't tell you the miscarriage story either. When you say, oh, one of my girlfriends lost her baby, it's horrendous, they just need to say, wow, that's really sad. What can I do? Can I come to the funeral with you? Do you need me to do something for you? Can I make you a dinner? Rather than, oh, here's a story that might be helpful for you. We offer advice where it's not needed, and it just comes back to that discomfort. So if I can say anything at all about offering condolence, is take a breath. It's okay to be sad. You don't know what to say. Just be there. You've got to show up, and you don't have the right words, so don't ever feel important enough that anything you're going to say is actually going to take away that pain. But your comfort will be felt.
Mm. And tell me though, because I've had lots of chats with people about this, because obviously I think, again, we have a different perspective based on our experiences and the numerous experiences we've had. But, you know, a lot of people haven't quite have had that. So some people just can't quite deal with it. And I know, you know, a number of people can't actually go to funerals that with babies or children. It's just too traumatic for them. What's your view on that, of like people that didn't come to your funeral that you felt should have, or people that gave condolence in different ways? Because obviously everyone is different and everyone does deal with stuff differently. And for some people, it's just, it is too much.
Absolutely. And it's hard. There's very few people that I know that actively didn't make the choice, and the ones that didn't regret it now. So if I can leave everyone with that piece of information, there's a good one. Nothing bad is going to go wrong at a funeral, except that you might ugly cry for the few days that follow it. So if there is an opportunity for you to go to a funeral to pay your respects, and be it, as we said, if you didn't know that person's dog or you never met that person's uncle, but you're there for your friend, go. There's no question in that. And I understand that it's hard, and I understand that you're going to cry, and it will be extremely sad. But your fear is of your own emotion. It's not of anything else that's going on with the death or dying or the parting of that person.
And the other thing I think is phenomenal about you and Anne, and I mean, the way you have navigated this, and I know it hasn't been easy all the way through, but, you know, these kind of horrendous situations can often, you know, put a real kind of barrier between couples and partners. And, you know, some people can't overcome this type of, you know, circumstance and situation. So how did you navigate that together, and what kind of things did you do to support each other when you're both grieving, you know, so much, like equally at the same time, both in that circle, as you say? How do you support each other through that?
We were very conscious to grieve together, and absolutely many, many couples who go through a severe illness with a child with disabilities, or the death of a child, their marriages or relationships often don't survive it. We had a tying bond. I was actually pregnant, 17 weeks pregnant at the time that Sebi died. So most people who have gone through a grieving experience will know that there's this, you know, 6 to 12 week period where it's just black. There's not much happening. It's dark and it's sad and it's horrendous.
Oh, you're just in shock, aren't you? You're like a zombie. You don't even remember. You think you're fine at the time, but you remember back and like, I don't even know what happened.
No, not sure how I did anything or moved. But we, during that time, as a blessing, I guess, we were growing another human. So that was sort of there on the side.
And how did you feel about that? Sorry, I need to kind of break in there. Like, was that bittersweet? Did you feel like, I don't know, you know, was there any kind of guilt?
I was devastated when I found out it was a boy. So quickly, Sebi died, his brain died before his body did. So he was on life support, and they told us that his brain had died on the Monday. And Ant, my partner, said, well, let's go and get an ultrasound, and then we can tell Sebi his little secret. He's having a brother or a sister, and then we won't tell anyone. So for the rest of the pregnancy, it was Sebi's little secret. As we're walking to the ultrasound, which was a very, very long walk because I'd just been told my baby had died, and then I was like, we've got to leave him for 30 minutes. God. So it was horrendous.
I can't even imagine.
So we got straight in, and the lady was ready for us, and she put the thing straight on my belly, and Dash, our little boy, was just like, legs akimbo, here's my balls. So often with ultrasounds, it takes a while for them to figure out what it is, but he was like, I'm a boy and I'm coming whether you like it or not. So this poor ultrasound lady, I remember I wrote her a card after a few weeks later, because I remember the howling. It was horrendous. It was as bad, if not probably worse, than the hour before when they told me that Sebi had died. It was guttural that it was a boy. And I think it's just, I didn't know the love that I could have for two separate people that are my children. I mean, you have it. You've got two stepsons. You love them equally, but very differently, you know? And I don't, it was hard for me to comprehend that this wasn't a replacement of my baby. One of the other things to never say to someone who's lost a child, oh, well, at least you've got another one. Just add that as an aside. So it was hard to comprehend
that.
What
is wrong with people?
I know. I know. You've heard all the stuff I've heard. It's just bad. So growing another human was kind of, it was beautiful. But as we came out of that fog and as we were like, right.
It's almost bittersweet though, huh?
Let's do this. Yeah. It was like, wow, I've got this baby. And then he came and he was totally different. Kids are always different. No two kids are the same. There is nothing about Dash that reminds us of Sebi, except the fact that he was a baby and he's gone through all of those same stages, and we can go, oh, Sebi used to do that.
He's just as beautiful. You
yeah,
create beautiful
just,
children.
Yes, I do. Thank you.
He's just as gorgeous.
Bittersweet is a good word, because it's actually more bittersweet now as he ages, because I have very emotional days whenever I'm with my brother's kids as well, because they, particularly Isla, who was Sebi's closest cousin, they're only 6 months apart. So now whenever I'm with my Dash and cousin Isla, I just know Sebi should be there, because he just should be there in the middle. And that's never going to change.
He's there.
Yeah, he's, of course, he's there playing with them. But it's actually harder now, that piece, because the older they grow, the more reminder that you have that Sebi's not here.
And I know that you keep his, you know, his memory alive and well, and you talk to Dash about his big brother all the time, and, you know, you do a lot of posts and stuff about that. So do you feel that that's really important in terms of little Dash understanding it, Sebi, as part of his life?
Absolutely. So Dash will always know that he's got a big brother. We definitely don't want to hide that away. And I wrote something that's quite important, and I've been reading a bit of my writing recently because I haven't done some in a long, long time. But my writing's quite emotional for me to read back on, because I think, like you write things at different points in your life. And I had this real realization last year. We attended a red nose grief ceremony, and once a year you light a candle and say your baby's name aloud, and there's many, many grieving parents in the room. It's very emotional, but it's very beautiful, because it reminds you that you're not alone. Unfortunately, this is a club and there's a lot of members that's sad. But I was looking around the room, and there were a lot of women like me, you know, young, successful women in their 30s who look like me. And I was just thinking, how did she lose a baby? And how did they have a kid that died? And I was like, oh, wait, that's me. I'm that woman. Because when you think about children who've lost their women, you think about the old grieving widow wearing black and never recovering from it and never wanting to talk about it. And I wrote this piece that is just about that, about it can be anyone. And it's the choices that we make each day. And this comes back to grieving as a whole. People say to me all the time, how are you so strong? How are you doing this? What is different about you? And it's just choice. That's all it is. Because what is my choice? What is the choice of a grieving person? You can stay in bed for as long as you want, and there is no time on grief. And if it takes you years, if it takes you decades, that's okay. But are you giving life to the person who's lost it if you choose to stay in bed?
And not live your life to the full. Yeah. What a beautiful way to encapture this whole entire discussion, Eddie. It's, as always, just beautiful to hear your view on such a delicate, sensitive and emotional topic, and yet you bring so much pragmatism to the you know, the topic of death and grief and such heavy stuff that you've dealt with, but in a beautiful way of trying to assist and help others, you make it a lot more almost attainable and understandable. So I really thank you for that. And I know that people can look, you do a lot of writing and a lot of resources on your website, The Griefy Way, don't they? Would you like to sort of touch base a bit on that?
Yes. So The Griefy Way is a piece of writing that I started for Sebi at the time. So yeah, you will read things on there that are written at different times of my happiness levels. But I think I've connected to some really interesting resources on there. And as we talked about the Silk Ring Theory, just really basic things that are helpful. But the one thing that I can reiterate is if you know someone who is grieving, you don't need to know what to say, but you do need to do something.
Even if it's just sending them love, you know, like send them love, drop them a text. If you can't have the strength to call, or as you say, always writing something. Handwritten these days is beautiful because we just don't get that sort of stuff very often. Yeah. So just a little card or a little note to know that you're thinking of them. That's all you need.
Yeah.
And yeah. And just checking in all the time. So darling, lovely to catch up. Thank you again. And we will catch up really soon and talk about something else.
Yes, we maybe won't talk about death and grief, dying.
I'm sure. First time ever.
Thank you for
having me. Sending
you
lots of love. Thanks, Eddie.
Okay.
Bye. If you'd like to learn more about today's guest, you'll find all the show notes and interesting links on our website, wabisabiseries.com. If you'd like to hear more unexpected conversations, please subscribe to the series, follow us on our socials, or grab one of my books. And if you're in a generous mood, I'd love you to share the episode, or maybe even rate, review, and comment on the series. It really does make a difference. Until next time, be sure to claim your own piece of wabi-sabi and walk proud in your perfect imperfection.